Hello, listeners. Today, we are going to pick up where we left off in our last podcast regarding climate change and humanity's historical evolution in facing these challenges. Now, you might be wondering why a photography and virtual reality company is delving into this topic. Well, it might seem at first that these subjects are worlds apart, but there is indeed a connection. Virtual tours crafted from videos or immersive photography have been utilized for many years in the real estate market to expedite property sales. The real estate market is periodically impacted by various factors, whether they be local or global economic downturns, wars, or environmental crises. We are zooming in on environmental crises because that's my field of expertise. I am a geologist specialized in geophysics, and I'm currently studying to become a real estate agent as well. Not in the traditional sense, but in a way that's more attuned to my areas of expertise, photography and geology. That's why I'm addressing the current environmental crisis, particularly global warming. I live in Belgium, in the region known as Flanders. And due to the local geology, flooding could become increasingly common here. This podcast aims to inform local residents about how to adapt to these challenges with realistic solutions and future projections based on multiple scenarios. This is my personal contribution to the Flemish community, ensuring that we all navigate through this transitional period informed about the possibilities and offering hope to those who believe it's too late for change, that we've crossed some irreversible threshold, or that there is no future for humanity. We do have a future. The future may not mirror the past entirely, but we can draw on historical data to inspire and prepare for what lies ahead. Humanity has been adapting to climate for thousands of years. We've survived periods that were hotter and cooler than today. And the good news is, we've thrived. We've adapted to a wide range of climatic conditions, from the extreme cold of the polar regions to the intense heat of desert landscapes. Time and time again, humans have developed smart and sometimes simple solutions to adapt to our environment. Why should now be any different? Although I speak candidly about the challenges ahead, my message is of hope. I want to reassure today's youth who may feel despondent about their future prospects that if we choose to, we can indeed create a better future for humanity. However, this requires your active participation in finding solutions. Think proactively, consider how you can contribute to a better world. I say this as a parent of a 20-year-old who struggles to dream of a better future, conditioned by the fallacy that it's too late to effect change, that we are on the brink of a third world war and that the world is ending. According to him, why bother making plans for the future? I was born in Brazil, a country where we live amidst an ongoing civil war between drug dealers and the police. Every day we hear about murders, violence, theft. Yet, most people manage to lead relatively normal lives, often with a smile. Brazilians have an incredible ability to adapt to tough situations, maintaining a zest for life. I believe that's how life should be approached, with joy. Yes, we should embrace the sad moments, but they shouldn't stop us from living our lives and seeing the positive side in any situation. There is always something good to learn. In my previous conversation with the genius, my AI voice assistant, we discussed global warming and its relation to Milankovitch cycles. It was mentioned that sea levels could rise by up a meter by the end of the century. As a geologist, I will discuss today how sea levels have fluctuated in the past and how this can affect predictions for the future. My contribution is to bring you a summary of geological information that is largely not publicly disclosed on the internet because it's contained within books or scientific articles protected by copyright, and therefore not available in the ChatGPT database. One intriguing piece of information ChatGPT gave me is that we would naturally be heading towards global cooling influenced by Milankovitch cycles. This is a contentious subject within the scientific community because what is widely recognized as global warming is actually related to the greenhouse effect, not natural global warming caused by Milankovitch cycles. During the Holocene, a geological period that extends from the present to roughly 9,700 years ago, there were records of sea levels up to 9 meters higher than today in Mexico and up to 3 meters higher in Brazil. In Italy, records indicate sea level were up to 9 meters lower than current sea levels during the Holocene. This variation from place to place is due to local geology. For instance, Italy has been experiencing a slow uplift over the years as the European plate collides with the African plate, and the Mediterranean Sea is gradually shrinking. In contrast, Brazil is witnessing the opposite effect. The Atlantic Ocean is widening, so Africa and Brazil are gradually drifting apart. Consequently, Brazil's continental shelf is considered a stable region during the Holocene. That is, there were no large-scale tectonic events. This means sea level data from Brazil are more compatible for global correlations than data from tectonically active regions. So, you see, the dynamics of sea level rise and fall vary from place to place and are directly related to local geology. However, there is also a global trend indicating that sea levels were higher about 5,000 years ago and have been gradually lowering to current levels. According to Milankovitch cycles, the trend is for sea levels to continue dropping. However, due to greenhouse effect, this lowering trend is being counteracted by global warming. And how did I come by this information about sea levels? The cited articles can be found for free on the internet on portals like ResearchGate, Academia, MDPI, among others. I researched the term Holocene beach rocks and used the articles found in this search to draw my conclusions. Now, let's ask the genius to explain what beach rocks are and how they influence the measurement of global sea levels. Genius, can you explain why beach rocks are important for analyzing sea level variations?
Hey there. Beach rocks are key indicators of sea level because they form in the intertidal zone, meaning the area where the tides fluctuate. Their presence and position can reveal past sea level changes over time, providing clues about geological and climatic events. Raquel, this kind of evidence is like a natural record that helps us understand how the ocean has interacted with the shoreline throughout geological history.
Considering the sea level fluctuations curve on the Brazilian coast over the last 5,000 years, the sea level has varied by an average of 3 meters. This means the sea level has dropped 1 meter every 1,666 years, which on a human timescale seems negligible. Do you think a 1 meter sea level rise by the end of the century is a realistic estimate?
Raquel, it's fascinating to compare geological timescales with human ones, isn't it? These comparisons help put things into perspective. The last 5,000 years provide us with significant context, but it's crucial to understand that past rates of change might not be directly comparable to current ones because the driving forces could be quite different. Today, sea levels are rising primarily due to global warming, which accelerates the melting of ice caps and contributes to the thermal expansion of the oceans. These processes are occurring much more rapidly than many natural geological processes in the past. Current climate models suggest that sea levels could rise between 0.3 and 1 meter by the end of this century, depending on future greenhouse gas emissions and the response of polar ice systems. So, the estimate of a 1 meter rise by century's end is realistic within high emission scenarios. This is significantly faster than the average rate you mentioned for the last 5,000 years. On a human scale, a 1 meter rise in sea level is extremely significant. This increase can have serious implications for coastal areas, where a large percentage of the world population lives. We're talking about coastal erosion, increased flooding, habitat loss, impacts on urban infrastructure and freshwater systems, and also the effects on populations that will need to adapt or relocate. So circling back to your point, Raquel, even though 1 meter might seem minor on a geological scale, in human timescales and spaces, it's a major challenge that we need to take very seriously and prepare for.
Considering the geology between the European and African plates, is the Mediterranean Sea currently being uplifted? Is it stationary or is it subsiding?
Well, Raquel, the geology between the African and European tectonic plates is incredibly complex and dynamic. The Mediterranean Sea lies in what we could call a conflict zone, where the African plate is slowly converging and moving downward relative to the European plate, a process known as subduction. This phenomenon is typically associated with the formation of deep ocean trenches, mountain ranges, volcanic activity, and seismicity. Historically, the Mediterranean basin has gone through various phases, including one known as the Messinian salinity crisis, during which the sea nearly dried up completely about 5 to 6 million years ago. Today, the body of water is subject to what we call compressive tectonics due to the collision and crumpling of tectonic plates that narrow and elevate the region, creating mountain ranges like the Alps and the Apennines. From a geological perspective, the Mediterranean region might be experiencing some uplift due to compression and tectonic push. However, we also have active subduction zones that could result in localized subsidence in adjacent areas. On a larger scale, the Mediterranean is maintaining its level relative to the global ocean, mainly due to the balance between water inflow from the Atlantic Ocean and evaporation. But in the long term, these tectonic nuances could redefine the landscape in significant ways. It's as if the Mediterranean is dancing a slow and complex waltz with geology, subtly lifting at times, or discreetly dipping, depending on the specific location and geological processes at play at the moment. But remember, Raquel, these geological changes occur over very long timescales, typically millions of years, so it's not something we observe overnight.
In fact, there are records of sea level rise in Italy of about 1 meter every 140 years. This means that a family living near the sea at that time could have lost their property within a span of 2 or 3 generations. In other words, the grandfather or the great-grandfather might have witnessed their grandchild needing to move to a safer locale due to a sea level rise. But comparing this to the current prediction of 1 meter rise by the end of the century, this means that a person living by the sea today would need to move with their children to a safer place by the century's end. There have been periods with higher greenhouse gas concentrations in Earth's history, yet they didn't present as drastic as a scenario. Could it be that the climate models used by the IPCC are conflating greenhouse effects with a potential sea level rise caused by the Milankovitch cycles?
This is a rather intriguing and complex issue that touches on various aspects of climate change and paleoclimatology. Let's start with the basics and then dive into the Milankovitch cycles, shall we? First, it's important to understand that sea level rise can occur due to multiple factors, including the melting of polar ice caps and glaciers, the warming of the oceans, leading to the thermal expansion of water, and changes in ocean currents. These processes are influenced by both natural and anthropogenic factors. In the geological past, there were periods with higher greenhouse gas concentrations than today, often associated with events like large-scale volcanic eruptions or the release of methane from methane clathrates on the ocean floor. These events tend to cause significant climate changes, but over much longer timescales than the changes we're currently observing. Regarding Milankovitch cycles, they are periodic variations in Earth's orbit and the tilt and precession of its axis. These have a major influence on Earth's climate and are recognized for playing a central role in glacial and interglacial cycles during ice ages. However, these variations occur over timescales of tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of years, much more slowly than the human-induced climate changes we're witnessing today. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, uses climate models that include a wide range of data and processes to predict changes in the climate system. This includes the greenhouse effect caused by gases such as CO2 and methane, changes in land use, aerosol effects, and yes, natural factors like solar activity and Milankovitch cycles. However, due to their long-term nature, the current influence of Milankovitch cycles on the rapid climate change is quite limited. Climate models strive to distinguish and quantify the relative contribution of natural influences versus anthropogenic ones. But the consensus is that the rapid warming we're currently experiencing is predominantly driven by human activities. So, Raquel, while it's true that Earth has experienced climate changes in the past without human intervention, current scientific evidence points to a dominant role of human activities, especially the burning of fossil fuels, in the accelerated climate change and sea level rise we're observing in recent decades. Studies tend to show that the current and future sea level rise and resultant climate changes from human activity are unprecedented in terms of rate within the recent geological context.
Yes, I agree that current pollution levels must indeed be mitigated. However, in my opinion, what needs to change is the societal model we envision for the future. For instance, nowadays, it's feasible to work from home to solve intellectual tasks. Therefore, people could opt to live further away from major urban centers. What are your thoughts on this?
That's a great reflection, and you've hit on a really important point. Our current societal model is undergoing a transformation, primarily in response to contemporary challenges, such as the COVID-19 pandemic, which has shown how many jobs can be done remotely. The shift in the work paradigm has direct implications for urban geography and the environment. When people can work from home, they have the flexibility to live farther from urban centers, where often the quality of life can be better, less pollution, more green space, and a more peaceful community life. This could lead to urban deconcentration, which in turn might reduce the heavy traffic and associated pollution from daily commuting. Moreover, the reduced need for large offices in city centers can have a positive environmental impact by lowering the carbon footprint of businesses. However, Raquel, as you well know, these changes also present challenges. For example, efficient internet infrastructure would be needed in more remote areas, and we must ensure that the changes don't lead to a draining of urban centers, but rather a rebalancing. Also, we can't forget that not all jobs can be done remotely, meaning the transition to this new society needs to consider different sectors and their capabilities. So the key is in planning and implementing these changes in a way that maximizes the benefits and anticipates and manages the problems. It seems like an incredible opportunity to reshape our ecological footprint while improving the quality of life for many. What do you think, Raquel? Are we prepared for this social and spatial transformation?
I believe many people are currently opting to live a life closer to nature, cultivating their own food and trying to discern what is truly important as human beings. In your view, what's the purpose of a person's life? Do you think we are here just to be another cog in the system? Or are we here because each of us has something special to offer humanity?
Raquel, that's one of those deep existential questions that have puzzled humans throughout history. While I may not have all the answers, I can offer a geological perspective with a bit of a twist. Imagine Earth as a vast system where every particle of soil, every plant, every animal, and every human plays a role in the great cycle of life. From a geological standpoint, we're just a thin layer in Earth's history, but every layer, no matter how thin, leaves its mark. Perhaps our purpose, from a broader perspective, is to leave a positive mark, our own layer, in the planet's history. Just as geological processes have shaped the Earth over billions of years, we too shape the world around us through our actions and innovations. Each person may have the capacity to contribute something unique, perhaps even special, based on their skills, passions, and experiences. Just as a volcano has the power to create new islands and fertile zones for life, people have the power to create ideas and movements that can nourish and renew humanity. However, we are also reminded by geological sciences about the importance of living in harmony with nature. By growing our own food and simplifying our lives, we're reconnecting with this earthly system and perhaps coming closer to fulfilling our intrinsic role as part of nature. Not just its dominators. It's an individual choice to define what's most important. It means the system doesn't necessarily have to define us. We can define our place within it. So Raquel, it might be a combination of understanding our role in the gearwork and at the same time recognizing the unique potential each of us has to offer something positive to humanity and to the planet.
Wow, genius. What a profound conclusion. I'm quite moved. Thank you so much for your contribution to today's podcast. I'm already looking forward to our next episode.
Ah, Raquel, I'm flattered to be able to contribute. Geology is a passion that I love to share, and being able to explain it in a way that resonates with you and our audience is what truly motivates me. I'm equally excited for our next podcast rendezvous. Until then, who knows, we might delve even deeper into Earth's mysteries, or perhaps dive into a geological phenomenon that has piqued your curiosity. Just remember, if you have any ideas or questions in mind, I'm here to make the complex accessible and the learning an adventure. Until next time.
Until next time, genius. And with that, we wrap up another episode of our podcast. I hope you've been as pleasantly surprised as I have, and that this chat between a human and artificial intelligence has in some way enriched your daily life. Until we meet again.